The Guardian.
Have you always wanted to write a novel, a history, a short story, your epitaph? Want to know how successful authors do it? It's all in a new Guardian book. I'll tell you more at the end of this podcast.
This is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. For the next 4 weeks, this podcast will be collecting its plastic pass, donning its smartest suit, and preparing to battle its way through another grueling party conference season. But after a month of briefings, speeches, seminars, and soundbites, will we be any at all the wiser? Also this week, Parliament may be on a midterm conference break, but it's been a heavy week of policy discussion. Welfare cuts, GCSEs and Afghanistan have all proved provocative. Nick Clegg even found time to apologise for his tuition fees pledge. We'll try and figure out where the battle lines are being drawn. Joining me in the studio to help decipher it all, we have the cream of the Guardian's opinion pages, Polly Toynbee, Martin Kettle and Seamus Milne. A warm welcome to you all. So the political circus heads to Brighton this weekend for the first major conference of the season. The Lib Dems get the first week of the media glare, followed by Labour and then rounded off by David Cameron's closing speech to the Conservatives in 3 or 4 weeks' time. Polly, they might be increasingly choreographed, but set aside from temporarily cleansing London of the political class, do you think they're serving much purpose these days?
They're very peculiar festivals of politics where quite a lot happens in the fringes. You do get to see eyeball to eyeball all the leading players, very accessible to anybody who actually has the money to turn up at them. But they are these days very expensive, which means that ordinary delegates, there are fewer and fewer on the ground. And most of the people there are lobbyists, journalists, researchers, hangers-on of one kind or another who can scrape together the considerable sums, not just for paying to attend the conference, but for staying in these very expensive places, much more expensive now. They're no longer by the seaside, mostly. Used to be cheap boarding houses, no longer. Birmingham, Manchester, very pricey.
Martin, Polly's not quite saying we should pull time on the racket, but I think you wrote that last year, didn't you?
I wrote it at the end of the conference season when I was pretty fed up with too many cooked breakfasts in overpriced hotels. I think the party conference season has completely changed in my lifetime. You know, at some point, the party conferences were genuinely owned by the people who went to them as delegates or as representatives or whatever they want to call themselves. Of course, they were manipulated, and of course, there was skullduggery and all of that. But basically, they were participative events, and really now they're not participative events. And the people who are there are an audience, not an assembly in that sense. I mean, that doesn't mean they're not important, because there are moods and temperatures and, you know, neuralgic issues to kind of learn about. And so, you know, one has to go there and get the mood. But I think as deliberative events, they're a complete waste of time now, and in difficult times, quite a waste of money.
I mean, it's notable less of the media is going. I think Newsnight isn't anchoring programmes from out there anymore, and horror of horrors, there's no Guardian party. But Seamus, am I right in thinking there would have been a time where you would have said that Labour conference in particular should be a sovereign body, and have you given up on that now?
No, I think it's very important that the things that Martin and Polly have been talking about are changed, because it's a part of an aspect of the alienation of the political elite and the political class from the public, which is, you know, the political parties are part of. Now, you know, there are lots of things we can discuss about the decline of membership and so on, but there were specific decisions taken at particular times to wind down the democracy within the Labour Party at the party conference, and you know, the Lib Dem conference is still a democratic assembly, and so I think we'll see a lot of playing to the gallery next week. But to me, that's a good thing, that the Lib Dem leaders have to account to their own membership. And in the case of the Labour Party, you know, part of the process of renewal of the Labour Party and moving away from a particular form of politics which has been seen to have failed is about, you know, the elements that make up the Labour Party, including the trade unions, having more of a direct say in the debates and having a pressure, exerting real pressure that represents public opinion on the Labour leadership. So the Tory party has never been Democratic Assembly. But I think, you know, even there you see, you know, insurgencies, political insurgencies from time to time, which are important because they're about, you know, elements outside the magic circle of elite politics breaking through. So although all those things have happened, I think they're still open to shifts and pressure and change, and that needs to happen.
So, Polly, moving out on now to specific different conferences, Seamus is alluding to the fact that the Liberal Democrats are now the only party who have real democratic decision-making going on at their conferences. Far too few journalists know the Liberal Democrat rulebook. Do you think we're going to see flashpoints this year's conference? They've been predicted before, of course, and haven't quite happened.
I think there'll be flashpoints, but I don't think they will trigger a great rebellion. I mean, there will be a really hot debate about growth and reversing the economic policy, saying it's not working and growth and jobs is what we should be going for, much heavier investment and fewer cuts. So I think there'll be a very lively debate on that, but it won't be the sort of thing that will bind Clegg, and it'll be embarrassing for Clegg and indeed for Vince Cable too. But I don't think it'll bind them to saying, right, we have to walk away from this coalition if they won't change their economic policy.
But there's a question about the secret courts issue, which could become interesting. That's a real heartland Liberal Democrat issue, isn't it? If ever there were one, and a lot of members will be unhappy with the with where the government's going on that, and they do have a debate.
Yes, I think that that's the sort of issue which they might actually win. I mean, it's the sort of thing the government could relent on. They can't relent on their economic policy. Well, they should, but they can't. But this is the something where actually it could be one of those things where Clegg can walk away claiming some kind of victory. And if his party stiffens in, he says, goes back to Cameron and says, I'm sorry, my party's ordered me to do this. It could be a win for him.
And do you think, Martin, there'll be, you know, a showdown? People have predicted them before.
Ever since the Liberal Democrats went into coalition with the Conservatives, a lot of us have written beforehand that, you know, this is going to be a big high noon occasion when the party meets for its conference about the relationship with the Tories and the coalition. And it doesn't happen. And I don't think it'll happen this time. I mean, what is really striking about the Liberal Democrats, even today, is that they remain committed, for good or ill, and, you know, from outside it looks like for ill, to what they did in 2010, and that they've got, the belief is they've got to see it through. But I think what's going to be interesting, what I'm going to be watching for this week, perhaps more than anything else, is just the for signs of concern about the electoral prospects of the party as the general election hoves over the horizon, because it is beginning to play on people's minds, you know, that this party is facing not absolute wipeout, but, you know, losing at least half its MPs if something doesn't change. And, you know, what that something could be will not get resolved now, but I think it's beginning to get on the agenda. And part of it is whether Nick Clegg is the right person to lead the party into the next general election.
Seamus, do you think, I mean, I suppose any opinion pollster, we've got this stuff on the apology on tuition fees, any political strategist would say that the answer to that is an obvious no, I would have thought. Do you agree, Martin? I mean, just checking, do you think, I can't see anyone thinking that Nick Clegg would maximise their vote at the next election.
Well, I think not at the moment, but I think, you know, there's always a human instinct in these things to postpone these things until it becomes more pressing. And, you know, we've seen that in every party when things have been going badly in the last 10 or 15 years.
They'd make a big mistake to change him now, because but if they had a new leader, he needs to be somebody with that who gets a honeymoon run into the next election.
Absolutely. And in reality, it seems to me the only other candidate in town is still Vince Cable. I don't think realistically there's anyone else in the game.
But Seamus, do you think, I mean, a lot of commentators, particularly on the left, centre-left, have kind of predicted these showdowns of 2010, 2011. Martin says they haven't happened. Do you think it's just something in the sociology or the social psychology of the Liberal Democrat delegates, that they are instinctive compromisers, they're centrist, they're not like Labour delegates can be, which is rather more grumpy?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, I've seen a lot of upheavals and defeats of the platform at Lib Dem conferences. So I don't think it's quite that. I mean, I think rather what happened is at the beginning of the coalition, you know, they were successful in corralling the majority of the party to accept that as the only choice available, and that, you know, carries them some distance. Obviously, a lot of people have fallen away in terms of Lib Dem support in the intervening time. But I do think that maybe more than Polly and Martin, that actually we are moving now into quite a pre-election dynamic. Because, of course, although the election is supposed to be held in 2015, you know, it may happen earlier. But anyway, as the time builds up towards that, you know, these pressures on the leadership issue, on the issues of economic direction and policy become more pressing. And you've seen this summer, you know, the friction within the Lib Dem leadership becoming more pronounced. So, I mean, I think we'll see probably more of that at the conference.
Yeah, we've
bubbling away than maybe they're saying.
We've definitely crossed the watershed in this parliament now, so that, you know, the dominating argument is not, were we right to do what we did in 2010? It's how the hell are we going to deal with this the situation that it will exist in 2015? We've crossed a watershed, definitely.
Let's just skip forward briefly then to the rest of this season. Polly, Ed Miliband, latest polls say Labour's doing very well. Ed Miliband's doing much less well than his party. People always say make or break, but I guess when he's so far ahead, it won't be really, will it?
Something very peculiar about these great set-piece speeches, because nobody hears them, they see a few clips on the news, they get it mitigated through the likes of us commentators saying he did well, didn't do well. It percolates through in some mysterious way, even without people hearing. They are absolutely antique pieces of oratory. I mean, these days, a politician's future should not depend on his ability to speak to a very large number of people in a great orotund way and move the hearts of those assembled who are, as I said, mostly lobbyists, journalists, and people who are not the general public and not even his own delegates. Nevertheless, the awful truth is that it does matter that in the cycle of the political year, doing well or badly in a speech, nobody ever remembers what anyone actually said. Very rarely, maybe Kinnock's speech stands out. But people remember somebody doing well or badly. They certainly remember that Ian Duncan Smith fell flat on his face.
And they might remember, to be fair to Ed Miliband, he had this thing about predatory capitalism last year.
Yes, they might well remember that. They will remember it as being a sort of policy wonk speech that didn't quite work. But on the other hand, that he got something important right, and it continued to be right throughout the year. It didn't exactly save his bacon, but it certainly gave him quite a lot of credibility in quite a lot of quarters. I think this time he has to raise his game and sound more human, more warm, more engaged. You have to be a great actor to be a politician these days. Clement Attlee wasn't, but you have to be. And of course, a speech doesn't save you. Neil Kinnock made some of the best speeches and he never got elected. But a really bad speech can do you in.
Seamus, there are rumours that last year, when of course Miliband was, Labour was not ahead in the same kind of way, that Miliband had wanted to do a bit of traditional New Labour challenging the unions type stuff in some way, and that fell by the wayside late on in the drafting process. Do you think now he's further ahead he might do a bit more of that? He might feel he's going to try and play to the country as he presents it rather than the party?
Well, I hope not, because I think that would be sort of playing yesterday's politics, and I think it's a hiding to nothing for him, really. I mean, he played a few of those tunes, not on the union question, but on some old New Labour themes, maybe, in the interview he did with The Telegraph at the weekend, where he talked about saving capitalism and the hardworking rich and so on. I think what he needs to do really right now is to flesh out that point, you know, the strategic point he made last year about the nature of the broken neoliberal model and predatory capitalism and so on, and flesh that out with some real, clear symbolic policies which, you know, go much further than the short-term things that they've been promoting in recent months. Something which can symbolise a change of direction for the party and the country, probably in the core areas of economic policy, banking and so on. And I think they are looking to do that. But as much as his own personal, you know, self-promotion and image with the public, I think right now the Labour Party needs to be looking ahead to the next general election and driving through some trademark policies which would be seen to be changing the direction that we're going in. And I think that's really the biggest challenge for the party leadership, the Labour Party leadership at this conference.
Martin, one thing Ed Miliband will be grateful for, we can also say he's got to raise his game or whatever, is that this conference, unlike some previous ones, it's very much about him and his speech, whereas at David Cameron's conference the following week, the speech by Boris Johnson might be almost as important.
Well, I think Ed Miliband is the one of the three party leaders who will be going to conference feeling reasonably confident that he's going to do okay with his party. I think both Nick Clegg and David Cameron will go with to their respective conferences with considerable unease. I mean, that's not to say there are no questions about Ed Miliband, but it is to say that when you're leading by 10 or 12 points in the polls on a fairly regular basis, you get up in the morning feeling okay about yourself and less nervous. Cameron, I think, if we're moving on to the Tory conference now, I mean, it seems to me that Cameron, as a politician, is somebody who's always watching his back, and he's very nervous, I think, and very, very constrained by what he thinks is may be going to happen to him.
Sorry, are you saying that's temperamental about him, or are you saying that's just his
circumstances? Yes, I do, and I do think that's temperamental about him. I mean, somebody told me the other day that Cameron had a long conversation with them in which he pointed out, you know, but look what happened. Look what the Australian Labour Party did to Kevin Rudd. You know, he is very conscious, I think, that he has gone from being, you know, rather effortlessly successful as a Tory leader to being somebody who feels quite vulnerable and rather isolated. And the whole Boris phenomenon, I think, however preposterous it is in some respects, I think, you know, that absolutely pulls all that together. It's the lightning conductor that really is going to excite not just the party, but the press. I mean, the press is playing a very, very active role in promoting Boris Johnson for entertainment and opportunistic reasons as well as for ideological reasons, because, I mean, some of Boris's own views are not entirely clear. But the reality, I think, from Cameron's point of view, is he's going to have... You know, you've got Boris Johnson giving a speech on the Tuesday and Cameron giving a speech on the Wednesday, and he's going to wake up on the day he's giving this speech conscious that Boris has probably had a storming reception, got lots of good coverage on the TV, and, you know, he's going to be worried because that's the kind of person he is and because he is objectively not safe.
And isn't it right, Polly, that the sort of talk is that Boris's theme will be something along the lines of how to win? That's not tremendously helpful to David, is it?
No, I think he feels that he's got a role to say how I won in London, which of course is entirely irrelevant to any other battle. It's quite a different thing to be elected as one person, particularly against Ken Livingstone, who was the wrong candidate for a whole number of reasons. But he'll spin that into, you know, I am the winner. That'll be his message. His mischief-making knows no bounds. He's impertinent. He's cheek. His sheer nerve at breaking every bound and every barrier. I think there's nothing Boris couldn't do if he put his mind to it. I happen to think he's a sociopath, and I think that he is, a deeply and thoroughly self-centred politician. They all are to some extent, but he is in a league of his own. But that makes him very dangerous.
And Seamus, I think you also lean towards regarding this as something more than a joke.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we have to wake up to the fact that Boris Johnson is popular. He has transcended the perception of politicians. He comes across to a lot of people, in my view, completely wrongly, but he comes across as a genuinely authentic politician as opposed to a sort of fabricated, elite politician. And, you know, I think he's shown himself to be very effective and to be able to mobilise, you know, people who are not normally Tory voters. You know, you've got for Cameron.
But isn't it understandable? I mean, you know, people are so sick of this kind of lines to take kind of politics.
Yeah. So he does it very effectively. But I mean, the irony is, of course, that he represents exactly that traditional elite politics that he appears to stand against. And, you know, in time that may become clearer, but he's very good at making it appear the opposite. And so, for example, when he stood up immediately at the end of the Olympics and said, you know, we're going to stand for against the third runway at Heathrow, and, you know, I'm going to fight the government. You know, that comes across to people, whatever their view about Heathrow and runways, as somebody who's an independent, genuine, authentic politician. So I think, you know, you've got the combination of that, as Martin was talking about. You've got the fact that you've got in the Tory parliamentary party, a whole group of MPs who regard themselves in the first place as having been elected despite David Cameron rather than because of him, who are well to the right of the centre of gravity in the government. You've got an angry Tory press, and you've got UKIP snapping at their heels all the time. So there's the pressure for them to move to the right is quite substantial. So I think you're going to see at the Tory party conference Cameron trying to manage this process in a very, very threatening way.
But given you've both been so thoroughly going kind of horrible about Boris, I mean, shouldn't we try and just be a bit fairer? He stood up on some slightly surprising issues like housing benefit in London, hasn't he? I mean,
well, it's all very opportune. He'll grab at anything that suddenly seems, and it is going to make trouble for him, housing benefit. There's going to be a great exodus within London, and he's going to be held responsible for that. He is a Conservative, so by putting himself outside of that, he suddenly becomes not responsible, not part of something that's going to be more and more socially embarrassing. We've already had 44% increase of people in B&Bs. It's going to get worse. But I do think one thing about Boris is it shows the power of language. What he has going for him is this wonderful command of words, and he makes every other politician's vocabulary seem limited, dull, dry. And what I said about, you know, speechifying being irrelevant, the use of language is always really important, and most politicians these days are pretty poor at it.
I mean, let's not forget that on the key questions of the crisis of the last 5 years, he has stood for against regulation of the City of London, which is at the heart of the crisis, for cutting taxes on the wealthiest in the country, and on the central issues of banking, the economy, inequality, he stands against public opinion. But for the reasons Polly's talking about, and others besides, he's been very effective at masking that. And so the question is whether that becomes clearer as time goes on.
Martin, Seamus mentioned just before there about UKIP, and that's another conference that's been going on that maybe we're part of this elite bubble and haven't mostly given much attention to. But what do you think has been going on at the UKIP conference, and how large do you think it will loom at the Conservative conference in due course?
Well, I think UKIP has got the Tory party spooked because it's increasing in the polls and it's going to do very well in various electoral contests, much better than people assume, I think, possibly in the Corbyn by-election, possibly in the police commissioner elections, improbable though that may seem at first sight, but particularly in the European elections in 2014, which, you know, come just a few months before the general election is due. So, you know, I think they're definitely important, definitely a pressure. It suits the right in the Tory party that UKIP is doing well, because they can use that to leverage a more right-wing and more anti-European position onto the government. And I think they're going to have a very important role to play. I think it's important in the party conference season just to remember, give oneself a little space, a little discipline to say there are other parties in this mix in British politics at the moment, and UKIP is one of them.
Greens
are another, and of course the SNP, which has its conference after the Tory party, is another one, hugely important, and everything that the SNP and UKIP stand for maybe a bit sort of unfamiliar to a lot of listeners and a lot of readers of The Guardian, but actually they are making a big impact in the dynamic of politics, and, you know, they matter, so we've got to report them and think about them.
And of course they could matter in some hung
coalition.
Parliament in the future. Okay, well, I think we'll leave all of that there for now. My thanks to Seamus, to Polly and to Martin. You can follow all our coverage on our website at guardian.co.uk/politics. And if you're heading to Brighton, Birmingham and Manchester in the next few weeks, then do come and say hello. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Tom Clark, and thanks very much for listening.
Hi, I'm Simon Hattonstone. I'm a Guardian journalist, and I occasionally write books that are not read by many people. Let me tell you about some of the great advice from those who really know how to do it. Top name authors that you can read in a new Guardian book called Write. It's brilliant. Funny, perverse, bonkers and wise. If it sounds like writing, then I rewrite, says Elmore Leonard. There's Anne Enright for despairing writers. Remember, the first 12 years are the worst. So, don't put off that dream of winning the Booker Prize any longer. Get inspired by our new Guardian book, Write. You can get yours for half price, £6.50, using promo code PODCAST. To order, visit guardian.co.uk/bookshop anytime up to the end of October.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.